Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I'm going to cover 1 Kings chapter 5. I'm going to call it Preparations for Building the Temple. Just 18 verses today, a relatively short video. Our context is this. In chapter 4 of 2 Kings, we read all about Solomon's officials, lots of them, Solomon's provisions, lots of them, and Solomon's wisdom and literary gifts. Basically, chapter 4 was talking about what a great king Solomon was. And so now we turn now to chapter 5, preparations that Solomon is making to build the temple. We go to 1 Kings 5, verses 1 through 5. When Hiram, king of Tyre, heard that Solomon had been anointed king to succeed his father David, he sent his envoys to Solomon because he had always been on friendly terms with David. Solomon sent back this message to Hiram. You know that because of the wars waged against my father David from all sides, he could not build a temple for the name of the Lord his God until the Lord put his enemies under his feet. But now the Lord my God has given me rest on every side, and there is no adversary or disaster. I intend, therefore, to build a temple for the name of the Lord my God, as the Lord told my father David when he said, Your son whom I will put on the throne in your place will build the temple for my name. Verse 1, Hiram, king of Tyre, is mentioned. Some say he's the grandson of the Hiram that was friends with David. Could be the same guy. It's not clear. Let's see why Hiram of Tyre was friends with Solomon's father David, 2 Chronicles 2:3. Then Solomon sent word to King Hiram of Tyre, Do for me what you did for my father David. You sent him cedars to build him a house to live in. So David didn't build the temple, but he did build himself a nice cedar palace. And Hiram of Tyre, whether the same Hiram or maybe the father of Solomon's Hiram or maybe the grandfather, but Hiram of Tyre had sent David cedars to do that. And now Solomon is going to get cedars from Hiram in order to build God's house, the temple. Now, it is said in verse 1 that Solomon has always been on friendly terms, Hiram had always been on friendly terms with David. There was a mutual advantage there. Tyre was a commercial city. Israel was agricultural, and so I'm sure there was a lot of trade between the two. Verse 3, Solomon tells Hiram of Tyre, You know that because of the wars waged against my father David. What wars? Well, David had to fight the Philistines, the Moabites, the Edomites, the Syrians. He was fighting everybody. And because he was a warrior, God wanted the temple to be built by a man of peace. Solomon means peace. And so Solomon is building the temple and not David. Now in verse 5, Solomon says, As the Lord told my father David when he said, Your son whom I will put on your throne in your place will build the temple for my name. So Solomon is quoting the Lord or citing the Lord as having at some time told David that David's son is going to build that temple. Now that's a little bit dicey here because what is Solomon referring to? Well, he has to be referring to 2 Samuel 7:13. This is according to John Gill in the pulpit commentary and all the other commentaries assuming, I'm sure. 2 Samuel 7:13. He, that's God, will build a house. Excuse me. He, David's descendant, will build a house for my name, for Yahweh's name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. So the son of David, the descendant of David, will build a house for my name. Well, you read that, you think, well, that's talking about his descendants, a family house, a house of descendants, a living house, if you will, what it sounds like to me, too. But that's not how Solomon took it. He's taken that promise as a literal promise that David's descendant will build a house for God's name. Well, John Gill has no trouble believing that promise that God, through the prophet Nathan, had made to David that David's descendant would build a house. Gill has no problem in taking that house as a physical temple. Well, let's read what some other commentators say about this promise in 2 Samuel 7:13, which I'll read again. He, the descendant of David, will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. Here's what the commentator Benson says. This is meant literally of Solomon, who alone did build the material house or temple, but ultimately of Christ, who is the builder of God's spiritual house or temple. Here's what Poole says. This is meant literally and immediately of Solomon, who alone did build the material house or temple, but mystically and ultimately of Christ, who is the builder of God's spiritual house or temple. So Poole and Benson are basically saying the same thing. John Gill says this, "He shall build a house, the descendant of David shall build a house for my name, for God's name, for the honor of it, for the worship and service of God, as it is well known Solomon did, and so his antitype, the Messiah." So Gill takes the temple as being physical and literal for the worship and service of God, as it is well known Solomon did. So Gill takes the house as Solomon's temple, but then he mentions the temple's antitype, the Messiah. Or I should say Solomon's antitype, the Messiah. So the descendants of David are the temple, the church, in whom the Holy Spirit lives. So that's the ultimate fulfillment of this physical temple, the house. Pulpit commentary says this, "The temple which Solomon was to build was the symbol of the new development of Israel." Okay, symbol of the new development of old Israel, also new Israel too, the house. So I think that's how you solve that problem of whether you take house literally or figuratively. We go down to 1 Kings 5, verses 6 through 12. We're still in the middle of Solomon's message that he's sending back to Hiram in Tyre. Of course, I ought to mention that Tyre, that well-known city, is on the Mediterranean coast right north of Carmel, right north of Acre. Go up the coast a little bit and you get to Tyre. So Solomon continues speaking to Hiram in his message, verse 6, 1 Kings 5. "So give orders that cedars of Lebanon be cut for me. My men will work with yours. My men will work with your men, Hiram. And I will pay you, Hiram, for your men whatever wages you set. You know that we have no one so skilled in felling timber as the Sidonians." Now the Sidonians, of course, are right up the coast from Tyre. In fact, Tyre was started by Sidon. The two cities were formed close together, founded in time close together. As gotquestions.org says, Sidon is believed to have existed prior to 2000 BC, with Tyre being just a little younger. So Sidon and Tyre have been around for 1,000 years, a millennium, before we even get here to Solomon, who's in the 900s. BC. So going back to the message to Hiram, Solomon says, "You've got skilled labor, so do the Sidonians. We don't, so I'm going to send some men up there. Your men are going to help my men to cut those timbers, the cedars of Lebanon, down." Verse 7, "When Hiram heard Solomon's message, he was greatly pleased and said, 'Praise be to the Lord today, for he has given David a wise son to rule over this great nation.'" Why was Hiram greatly pleased? Well, he was pleased that his friendship with David would continue on with his son. Peace on the borders. Praise be to the Lord. That's Yahweh. So Hiram is praising Israel's God. So Hiram must have had some knowledge of Yahweh. Verse 8. "So Hiram sent word to Solomon." This is Solomon's finished with his message to Hiram. Now Hiram's going to respond back. "So Hiram sent word to Solomon. I have received the message you sent me, and I will do all you want in providing the cedar and pine logs." Now, that pine logs is a little interesting to me because Solomon didn't ask for pine logs. He asked for cedar logs. So I'm assuming that Solomon must have asked for some pine logs, and it was just not mentioned in the reporting of the message he sent to Hiram. It wasn't mentioned by the author of Kings. I don't know what the pine logs would be for. Perhaps to make the raft that the cedars would be floated down on the Mediterranean coast. I don't know why Solomon would need pine logs, because the temple was made all out of cedar. Well, I think I have the answer from Poole, who says this, "It wasn't pine." It's a translation issue. Quote, "Concerning timber of fir," and that's how Poole takes the translation, "concerning timber of fir, which formerly was, and still is, very useful in most buildings. Others render the Hebrew word pitch trees, or ash trees, or pine trees. To others, it was a particular sort of cedar, and therefore comes under the general name of cedars in Solomon's message before related." John Gill suggests it might have been cypress trees, which, of course, are also very resistant to water, very hard wood. Pine is not something you're going to put in a temple because bugs will eat them up and moisture will make them warp. So perhaps that translation of the NIV is not the best. The Holman Christian Study Bible translates the Hebrew word there as cypress, which makes a lot of sense. Now in verse 9, Hiram tells Solomon, "My men will haul them, the logs, the cedar and cypress logs, down from Lebanon to the sea. And once they get them to the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, then Hiram's going to float those logs and rafts by sea, on the Mediterranean Sea, to the place you specify." Now the place that Solomon specified was Joppa, which is on the coast there, right in present-day Tel Aviv. 2 Chronicles 2:16 tells us that. We, Hiram says, will cut logs from Lebanon as many as you need and bring them to you as rafts by sea to Yoppa. You can then take them up to Jerusalem. I've been on that highway from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv or to Yoppa. It's a straight shot. Now, these rafts that are bringing the cypress logs down, there's two ways you can take this. You can say the cypress was placed on the rafts and carried down, or it could be the cypress logs themselves were the raft, and they were just lashed together. The cedar logs, I should say, cedar and cypress logs. They were lashed together by rope or chain and floated on down. When they got to Yoppa, they were to be separated. Hiram says, I'll break them apart, the Holman Christian Study Bible says, because they're lashed together into a raft or on the raft. They're broken up, and then they will be carried overland from Yoppa to Jerusalem. And who's going to be doing the transport from Yoppa to Jerusalem? That, of course, would be Solomon's laborers. In return, Hiram continues, and you were to grant, you, Solomon, are to grant my wish, my Hiram's wish, for providing food for my royal household. So there's the deal. Food for logs. Verse 10, in this way Hiram kept Solomon supplied with all the cedar and pine logs he wanted, and Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 cores, which is 100,000 bushels of wheat, according to the Holman Christian Study Bible. 100,000 bushels of wheat is food for his household, in addition to 20,000 baths of pressed oil. 20,000 baths is 110,000 gallons. Now, folks, that's a lot of olive oil. Now, this is an annual amount. As we see, it says Solomon continued to do this year after year. So this was an annual amount of 100,000 bushels of wheat and 110,000 gallons of olive oil. Woo! Of course, we're talking about cedars. Those are expensive trees. Verse 12, the Lord gave Solomon wisdom just as he had promised him. Another reference to Solomon's wisdom, probably because how wise that Solomon handled Hiram. They were friendly. They had a good business deal going. There were peaceful relations, as verse 12 says, between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a treaty. And I assume the wisdom is talking about there Solomon's political wisdom in making a treaty with Hiram. Now, how long did this annual contract go on? Cedars for food? Nobody knows. Could be until the temple was finished, or it could be until Solomon died. I tend to think it was until the temple was finished. I mean, Solomon had to build his palace, too. He needed a lot of cedar, but once the building is finished, you wouldn't think the contract would continue. We go now to 1 Kings 5, 13 through 18. We'll finish this chapter. King Solomon conscripted laborers from all over Israel, 30,000 men. He sent them off to Lebanon in shifts of 10,000 a month, so that they spent 1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home. Adoniram was in charge of the forced labor. Solomon had 70,000 carriers and 80,000 stonecutters in the hills. Now we're shifting from the cedars to the stone. The quarries, of course, were in Israel, in the hills there, as well as 3,300 foremen who supervised the project and directed the workmen. At the king's command, they removed from the quarry large blocks of quality stone to provide a foundation of dressed stone for the temple. The craftsmen of Solomon and Hiram and the men of Gebel cut and prepared the timber and stone for the building of the temple. Notice in verse 13 that King Solomon conscripted laborers from all Israel. Now that verse makes it sound like these 150,000 laborers were Hebrews, Israelites, but they weren't. They were Hiram's men. We know that. By going to 2 Chronicles 2, verses 17 and 18, Solomon numbered all the aliens who were in the land of Israel, and the explicit word there is aliens. Solomon numbered all the aliens who were in the land of Israel, and 153,600 were found. He appointed 70,000 of them to carry loads and 80,000 to quarry stones in the mountains, and 3,600 supervisors to make the people work. And so we see that's the parallel passage. And in the parallel passage in Chronicles, it's aliens who were in the land of Israel. In Kings, it says laborers from all Israel, and that makes them sound like Hebrews. But they weren't. They were Hiram's men. Now, I say they were Hiram's men. That's because Gill and Clark suggest that. But I will note in the text that it just says foreigners, aliens. Doesn't say anything about them being Hiram's men, and those aliens could have been captured POWs from surrounding nations. The laborers had to work 1 month on, 2 months off. That's fairly lenient, but why? Well, the work was so strenuous, they needed 2 months to rest, cutting down these huge cedar logs. Adoniram was in charge of the forced labor. We saw him in the last chapter, 1 Kings 4:6. Adoniram, son of Abdah, in charge of forced labor. In verse 16, there were 3,300 foremen to supervise all the stone cutting in Solomon's home territory of Israel, to supervise the cutting of the quality stone. 3,300 supervisors. Second Chronicles has 3,600 supervisors. I'm assuming that's a copyist error. The Holman Christian Study Bible says that some Septuagint manuscripts read 3,600. We're not going to worry about that. The quarry stone is removed to provide a foundation of dressed stone for the temple. That means cut and fitted. We'll see later the cutting and fitting is not done at the temple site, but at the quarry site. Now, I just finished saying that 70 or 80,000 of these men were conscripted Israelites. Well, actually, they were Hiram's men, as John Gill and Adam Clark have pointed out. 2 Chronicles 2, 17 through 18 tells us this. Solomon numbered all the aliens who were in the land of Israel following the census which his father David had taken, and 153,600 were found. He appointed 70,000 of them of these aliens to carry loads, and 80,000 to quarry stones in the mountain, and 3,600 supervisors to make the people work. So these were Hiram's men that Solomon is supervising, but they came from Hiram. I assume the quarrying was done in Israel. The quarry has to be fairly close to Jerusalem. It's too hard to carry those big, large rocks from a far distance. So verse 18 talks about Solomon's men and Hiram's men all working together to provide the timber from Lebanon and the stone from Israel. I didn't mention this, but in Solomon's original deal, in his offer to Hiram, he said that he, Solomon, would pay the wages of Hiram. He would let Hiram set the wages and then Solomon would pay, which is, that shows a lot of trust to let somebody else set the price that you're going to pay. Now notice that this dressed stone that was to be the foundation of the temple, nobody's going to see that. It's in the foundation. But it still had to be dressed, even though you couldn't see it. The foundation of God's house had to be a quality foundation. Now these 70,000 men to carry the stones out and 80,000 to cut the stones out of the ground. That's 150,000 Gentiles, people from Tyre. There's more Gentiles working on that temple than the Israelites. John Gill says, is this a sign of the Gentiles coming into the kingdom? Well, Gill is type happy. He seems to think so, but I don't know. It is kind of interesting, though. Now, verse 18, the people that worked on the timber, the cutting of the stone and the carrying of the stone, all these men, both Solomon's men and Hiram's men, are assisted by people from, or men of Gebel. Now, Gebel is the old word for Byblos, which is a famous place. Random House in Dictionary, Random House Dictionary, which is accessed through dictionary.com, says Byblos is this, quote, an ancient Phoenician seaport near the modern city of Beirut, Lebanon. The chief port for the export of papyrus, the site is now partially excavated. American Heritage, again accessed through dictionary.com. The American Heritage Dictionary says that Gebel is, quote, an ancient city of Phoenicia northeast of present-day Beirut, Lebanon. It's close to Beirut. It was the chief city of Phoenicia in the second millennium B.C. and was noted for its papyruses. Well, ladies and gentlemen, with that geographical note, we are now finished with 1 Kings chapter 5. The temple's ready to be built. We'll go to our next chapter to see Solomon building the temple, verses 1 through 38. I hope I can cover the whole chapter in one audio. We'll see. I hope you joined with me in my endeavor in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.